Well, welcome back, everybody. MJ, we got another
Welcome.
new season.
Welcome back. Yes. A whole new 2024, whole new season.
Yep. Whole new season, whole new
fun time.
And we're starting off this podcast with an unbelievable book study. So we're super excited for that. And before we get too into that, we got a couple updates and reminders for all of our listeners out there. So first off, we've got the IEDL workshop number 3, which we teamed up with IdeaCon. That is next week. So if you
next week Tuesday.
Next week Tuesday. Yay! Holy cow, I can't believe it's already here.
Yeah,
if you have not registered, make sure you do. There is still space, but you need to get registered ASAP. So,
MJ, yeah, we're going to have a real good time.
Do you want to give a quick background of who's going to be there and exactly what they're going to be talking about?
Yeah, of course. So we'll be having a really great time. We've got two speakers lined up. We have Stephen Reed, who's British. and has an illustrious background, working for Microsoft and, all things tech. And he's going to be giving us kind of a future rundown of what esports, is going to be all about. And then we also have Becky Keene, who's actually from Seattle. And she is going to be speaking to us about charting a course through opportunities in AI. So it's going to be great. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah, great topics. I mean, esports, we've seen how esports have completely taken off. You know, most of the schools are all around us have some sort of esports team, and it's just thriving. And now we're starting to see on the professional circuit just the amount of money that's in it. So, I mean, it is a huge piece. So that's going to be great. And we know all things AI just continue to circle around. So great topics. Again, if you have not registered, make sure you do. We've sent out that link for you to get the IETL discount. If you don't have that, please feel free to reach out to myself and we can get you connected and registered. So we've got that coming up. We also have some great excitement starting about our CTO summit. I'm not going to give anything away yet. We've got a special announcement of where we're going to be and some things with it, but we're super excited about that. You definitely want to mark your calendars for June 20th. So June 20th, make sure you mark your calendars. We'll have more information for you, not just coming out through email blasts and marketing blasts, but also here on your number one podcast for all IEDL news and updates.
One and only.
Well, with that,
yeah, it'll be a fun time.
Well, with that, why don't we go ahead and get into our book study, MJ? And before I turn this over to you to introduce the book study, before we started the recording, it came to our attention that I think our two most popular guests are also with us on the podcast. And it didn't even hit me, but we've got two guests that I think are on either their third or fourth appearance on the podcast. We've got the one and only Mr. John Connolly here.
John.
Hey guys, how's it going?
It's great, John. It's good to have you back.
I am excited to be here.
That's awesome. And then we also have, not to be outshined, but I can't think of something else besides the one and only, but the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Brian Skibinski here as well.
Brian, yay.
Thanks for having me back. I'll make sure I send a check in the mail to everybody here.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So, all right, MJ, you want to kind of dive into the book? We talked about it at a very last podcast, but we've got a new book study. We've got a bunch of guests that'll be joining us over the next couple of weeks for our 3 podcast series. So we want to make sure any of our listeners, if you wanted to join in the book study or you want to read on your own, you still have time to do so. So MJ, you want to give us a quick intro here?
Yeah. This season we are reading Unreasonable Hospitality, by Will Guadara. And the whole idea is, how do we go above and beyond for the people we serve and the people on our team? So very much, you know, service hosted, service oriented, hospitality oriented. And really, what does that look like in our industry? What does that look like in our school districts and amongst our organizations? So we're really excited. There is just so much that we have gotten out of this book. In this particular session, we're talking about the first part of the book. So if you're reading along with the podcast, you know, take out your pens and highlighters, and we'll be sharing kind of our impressions, the things that occurred to us, the things that struck us in as we were reading through the first part of this book. With that, yeah,
just real Tony? Quick, MJ. So I downloaded the audiobook. I am way behind on understanding how to listen to audiobooks. I just want everybody on this recording to know this. It was not until the other day I was on a webinar where somebody was doing a preview of a video that they've got to bring to schools, and they sped it up. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea. I literally have been listening to audiobooks at either 1.0 or less. And I was like, what have I been doing wrong my entire life with this? So finally I sped it up and I was like, I think I can listen to this at 1.5. Now it's become a game. How quickly can I listen to still comprehend? Like, it's fantastic. Sorry, random tangent, but just for any of our listeners, if you did not know with audiobooks, you can speed it up.
You can speed it up. You can repeat it. You can even set the timer so it like stops at every at the end of every chapter.
Oh my gosh, mind blown cool right now. Mind blown.
All right. We can become expert listeners.
Yes. Yes. Oh goodness. All right. Well.
Well, let's start. Like, so I'm tossing it out there. Like, we started out the book and with this concept of unreasonable hospitality. So as you're reading the first parts of this book, like, what do you think is unreasonable hospitality? Like, what does that mean to you?
Sure, I'll jump in. I mean, I think when you get into public education and you're in this position, right? You're in a service level position to start with. I mean, our jobs in technology exist to serve, because we're there to fix the problems of our staff and our administration and teachers and students. And I think it was always a service industry. And I think never before did that idea of our departments being servants explode until everybody got a laptop and everybody was remote. And, you know, this department was looked upon and how to help everybody with their needs. And, you know, I think one of the things we looked at here, I was page 41, take care of each other first. And, you know, it's like, how do we always, you're taking care of people, but then you're taking care of people truly in their most vulnerable spot, because they were put into a situation where some had really struggled with being able to maintain the ability to teach remotely. And so you're meeting people truly, I don't like this saying, but it's like where they were at. So you had to take more time with people that were struggling with simple things like Zoom and sharing a screen, where other people were much more advanced. But we dealt with so many different people and in so many ways that we had to try to help everybody.
Yeah.
And I look here, it was like page 5. And with that, you had to create this authentic connection with people, because again, these staff members were vulnerable, so they were showing that there was a lack or a deficiency in what they felt comfortable with, but you had to have the trust and letting them feel comfortable with you to share that vulnerability, which was that authentic connection to help them, you know, grow to do their job. And you know, I don't think anything has changed since then. I mean, for me, this has always been the mission I've always wanted to be in. And so I feel very grateful to be, you know, I mean, I think you talk to a lot of people out there. maybe are in careers that are not what they really envisioned themselves being in after college. And I'm very fortunate that I'm one of the people that are in a position that I've always wanted to be in. The joke is, as a kid in college, I wanted to be a CTO. And then I'm very lucky to sit there and say I'm able to do it. It's, you know, maybe I should have shot higher. I don't know. But, you know, for me, I think this is I enjoy helping people. And there's always a need for technology and having conversations with people. It's such a fun job to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. And you described it, you know, perfectly, Brian. We're in a service industry, and we catch people at their most vulnerable moments. Sometimes it's when they're having a problem, when they're facing a huge challenge, and they're not able to perform because, you know, there's something goes wrong, right?
I mean, how many times do our departments get pulled in when something isn't working? You know, it's usually to put the fires out. And one of my favorite sayings was by a former sportscaster. He was Stuart Scott. He has since passed on. But all those Sports Center guys had their famous catchphrase, and his was, "You need to be cool like the other side of the pillow." And I jokingly tell that to my team all the time. Like, if you're going into a classroom and someone's upset, like, you can't be the one to pour gasoline or lighter fluid on a fire that's already burning. Like, you need to be the cool and the calm and work to the de-escalation to help solve that problem.
Yeah, and I just kind of want to add to that. So when I first started reading this this book, I was like, what is unreasonable hospitality? Like, what does that mean? Especially with this book focused on more on the restaurant side. And so the one that the author shares examples, but the one that kind of resonated with me is, as a waiter or waitress, if you know that your customer or your guest in the restaurant has a meter, a lot of it's tied into New York City, but has a parking meter, but figuring out subtly where they're parked and going to pay the meter so that they don't have to worry about the fact that they're getting close to the meter end and they can truly enjoy their dinner. And so that kind of, like, to me is, it brings it back to, just to add on to what Brian and MJ, what you guys just mentioned. Like, I always think about the number one learning factor for our students is the teacher. And so if you view the teachers as frontline, like, we are here to support teachers. We do not have a job without teachers and students. And so I always try and keep that in the back of my mind, where in our industry, let's face it, a lot of times we're working with a lot of teachers, and sometimes it's going really smooth. And sometimes we have our folks that always have problems or are not happy with technology. And I think having the mindset of, like, we're here to support you, it limits myself and my staff complaining or saying, oh, they're problem people or teachers this, teachers that. I think that's the general mindset that I had, just thinking about, like, unreasonable hospitality tied into the meter feed. And then my mind led to, like, the small things, like, how often do we follow up with someone after an issue and say, like, hey, last year or last week we fixed this, or yesterday I fixed this, how are you doing? And how long that goes to be almost unreasonable hospitality in our world. And then the last thing, because I try and, you know, always put three in there, but just interdepartmental. when we're in a leadership meeting and someone is talking about an issue, a lot of times if we're paying attention, we could be saying, hey, we can help solve this.
Yeah.
I have an idea with the technology. And rather than just sit there and be like, it's not my problem, actually following up or during the meeting, be like, hey, I want to help, and here's how I can help. Yeah. I think those are just some random things that kind of came to mind when I thought about the unreasonable hospitality.
So, John, I'm gonna tag right off of what you said there. You know, the example that he gave that really struck me about what was unreasonable hospitality was the one right before the meter example, which was when a pair of guests were in the restaurant and realized that they had left a bottle of champagne in the freezer. And this really resonated with me because I feel like I've done this just so everybody knows. And they asked the sommelier, and the sommelier, they asked the sommelier if they left in the freezer, would it explode? And the sommelier was, yeah, most likely. And the sommelier ended up going to their house, taking it out, and then left caviar, chocolates, and something else to celebrate their anniversary. And, you know, I was like, wow, that is like, that is extreme. And as much as I wish that, you know, my department and my staff would think to that extreme, if we shoot for that extreme and we don't make the mark on that every time, that's okay, because wherever we land in between is going to be still that amazing hospitality. Then I started to think, you know, there's, I always get this, and I'm curious, but I'm also kind of assuming that all of us, being that we've made Brian's life goal as CTOs, that we also become like the family technology support, right? Mm-hmm. And how many times have we possibly been frustrated by either a family member and or a staff member because we have a hard time not being able to put ourselves in their shoes? And it may not just be us, it's also our staff. Of some of this stuff comes so easy to us. How do we get to that hospitality part where it doesn't matter if it's easy to us or not, we're still there to support the students, the staff, the parents, the community members? I mean, how many times have we been at a board meeting where either we are in the direct line of fire, or we're in the crosshairs, or we're doing a live streaming and something happens during the board meeting, and then everything is all of our faults. And we still have to put it ourselves in there that we're there to help and support. And so all of that kind of resonated with me of, you know, wow, this truly does go back to what John and Brian and MJ, all of us have been saying, is that we're not only just a support, but I would say we are the keystone support, because we now have almost kind of a hand in everything without wanting to be in everybody's lane, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt that technology has become the center hub. I mean, I talked about this with our you know, I think 20 years ago, no one wanted to admit that technology was working towards that way. Mm-hmm. But technology now has its hand in everything. We are the technology department is the central hub, which then branch out to the business operations, to HR, to registration, right? To collection of funds, operations and maintenance, curriculum and instruction, device management. I mean, to sit there and say there is an area in a school, or not even necessarily a school, or even in, you know, in any organization that technology doesn't have its fingerprint on, I would be surprised to know what that department was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and with that said, Brian, like, because we're so interconnected with every aspect of the business, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's important that our culture be able to infect or inspire like other cultures, right? Like the whole culture of the organization. And when we can kind of be, well, have unreasonable hospitality, and that be service forward, right? Like, this is, it's about customer service. It's about what's happening in the classroom. Like what John was saying, like our teachers and our students are our main diners. There are our clients, and any chance that we can to go to an unreasonable, like, right, height of delivery of an experience for them that would be so life-changing, like, because you'd have to say, like, Tony, the John, the two experiences that you're, you know, that the people that the book was talking about, that Will was talking about, was life-changing for those folks who when that happened, right? Totally life-changing. You'll never ever forget that this restaurant went out there and saved a bottle of champagne and made that experience even better, right? Like, how much more can we do that for our kids in the classroom? Because ultimately, that's really why we're there, right?
Well, yeah. We are the change makers. And I know he's got that Maya Angelou quote in there. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to use it. But I'm like, it was page 28. Where, I know, right? And I'm trying to find the page it was on. But I have here on page 28, let your energy impact the people you're talking to as opposed to the other way around. And so like for us, again, we get to talk to all these people. We talk to the business department. We talk to custodians. We talk to everybody in between. So when we hear something that isn't the way we want our school culture to be, like we actually are the ones that can sit there and say, hey, actually, no, man, that's not like the way we want to do things around here now. Mm-hmm. The thing on the same page where I've tried to do this now, because how many times do we see people in the hallway? Hey, Tony, how's your day going? And we're like, everything's fine or hunky dory. Or you say, you know, hanging in there. And what does he say here? He said, he talked about his college graduate, Randy. And he says, when someone asks him how his day is going, he says, you know, man, I'm trying to make today the very best day of my life. And I was like, there it is. Like, how do you sit there and make that response like authentic and genuine? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make today the very best day of my life.
Yeah.
I mean, that should make somebody like go and I mean, they might not pause as they walk past us, but they're going to be like, oh, I mean, that's a hell of a different response than just getting by.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's very true.
I'm trying to make today the very best day of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. The quote that you were referring to for Maya Angelou was, people will forget what you do. They'll forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. Mm. Right. And like you were just saying, Brian, like it's how you're looking at it. It's our perspective on it. And, you know, like we were referring to, there's a constant stream of like problem solving, people solving, grumpiness, like, you know, like people who are angry. Brian, you were talking about like people who are angry, like at your board meetings or whatever. And, you know, people who are disagreeing and we're living in such a polarized environment right now. How much more can this be, you know, an inspiration if the more of us took that kind of stance, right? Like, I'm making this the best day of my life as possible, because every day is a new day. Every day is another day, right? And how do we keep that energy going?
And I think, you know, going on to another part of it is, how do we get our staff to think that way, right? You know, MJ, when you and I were initially looking at different books, you were like, oh, Tony, this kind of reminds me of a show. And for all the listeners out there, it takes a lot for me to like get into a show. Everybody would think that I could easily get distracted into a show, but it's quite the opposite. I can watch like two and then I'm like, I'm good. I'll come back to it. However, I am now all the way done with season one of this show. And so those of you that haven't figured it out, but with the restaurants, it's The Bear, right? One thing that kept hitting me as I was listening to the book and then watching The Bear is the level of precision that which all of the staff are on the same page, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I want to walk around the department and just be like corner and, you know, come up with like, you know, yes, tech or something like that for the respect, the mutual respect.
Yes.
You know, we're in the trenches, but we're producing unbelievable things and we want to give our guests, our clients, our stakeholders the best experience ever. And the only way that they're going to have that is if our staff is all thinking the same and performing amazingly well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And just like a quick hitter on that. In my district, we do weekly coordination meetings with my managers. So every Monday we map out the week. It's interesting on how restaurants do that daily before the shifts. And he talks a lot about how they took that meeting and what they did with the agenda and then have other people run it and then educate them on the area so they're better with their clientele. I think for tech directors that aren't doing at least a weekly, let's huddle up what's going on for the week. I mean, like, part of me wants to say, I wish I did that daily, like a quick 5 minute or 10 minute to start the day. But it's just kind of interesting. But that to me leads into what, Tony, you just said, like everyone's on the same page to start the shift. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
There's yeah, a lot of exactly.
companies that do stuff like that. Like I think Walmart's got like a morning huddle that they do as well with all their staffers. Yeah. It's an interesting thought.
It is a very interesting thought. And it's something that, like, being new at my district and with the scale of my district, I've been trying to figure out, like, how do I keep in touch with my, like, the various teams, but the leaders in the teams, so that they can be enabled to do what they, you know, the best job that they can do. Because, like, in the scale for me, like 2,000 employees, 10,000 and 10,500 students, like, to me, this is an entirely new experience. And I have come to the point where I'm like, I can't do it all. I cannot possibly do it all. So how do I help my team do it? Right. Like that's, and so Brian, you had mentioned like part of one of the things that the book opens up with is how do we support our teams in this idea of unreasonable? How do we be unreasonably hospitable to our team members so that they in turn can then be unreasonably hospitable to like the, you know, whoever else that they're serving, right? At, you know, in that sense.
And one thing that jumped out at me on that, MJ, is the 95-5 rule on budgeting. So what they shared in the book is to be tight with your budget. And he talked about how he was tight with 100% of the budget versus the other way. And he kind of led into be tight with 95% of your budget, like be very frugal so that 5% can be spent on your employees and your staff, your team, that is maybe a little bit of a stretch. And I kind of liken that to like almost like conferences for us. Like if we're super tight, 95% of our budget is super tight, we can buy, in my opinion, District 230 technology shirts, offer conferences to connect folks and be a little bit more, use that 5% for our staff. I thought that was an interesting interesting way to look at it, because I know a lot of us are frugal with 100%, and we try and, because that's how we were brought up, like be tight with the budget. So it was interesting.
Which, John, when I read that, I was like, oh, this is so natural, because of the fact that, you know, on average, a school district's budget, 70 to 75% is salary, you know, is salary and benefits. So we're spending a ton of money to just have the people. But are we spending the money to make our people feel like staff and family, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So we're spending the money to get them in the building, but what are we doing to keep them in the building? And this goes hand in hand with retention and pipeline issues and all of that. And, you know, a happy employee is going to work harder and be more successful and be able to take care of our stakeholders. So that hit me when I was reading that part too.
Which yeah. goes but, exactly but I, what I the book of, says. Oh, yeah. Sorry, MJ. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I kind of think, though, like it's having happy employees that are inspired to do better in their jobs. I'm going to tag that on, because you can have people who are just like, whatever, I'm just coming to work every day and doing and getting by, like what Brian said. But like what we want are people who are willing to do the work, the important work of why it is that they're there, right? Everybody at 11 Madison Park, like all wanted to be there to make sure that their diners have the best experience ever. So getting people who are like, you know what? It's not yes, but it is yes. And like, do the, and like, Where can we move that past? One of the quotes that they had in chapter one was service is black and white. Mm-hmm. Hospitality is color, right? Black and white means you're doing your job with competence and efficiency. You know, we get that. People are coming in, doing what they need to do. But color means you make people feel great about the job that you're doing for them, right? Like, we're here to make our students great and like learning, like, you know, and whatever it is that we need to do to get that there, we need to support our staff in doing it, right? Because you need that. That's
totally.
That's what makes hospitality beyond just serving, right?
Well, I think, John, you started it. Tony, you tagged on, and MJ, you hit it there too. And it was, he had a quote in there. It was on page 24, invest deeply into the personal and professional growth of your employees. You know, and so you're absolutely right. I mean, we spend a lot of money to get the people into the door, but we need to do, we need to do the work as leaders, as our own department leaders, to continually professionally grow our people. And so an example I'm doing this year is, I did a goal for all of my team. We're studying the Network Plus certification together.
Great.
Awesome. And I said, why are we doing that? I'm like, well, you know, it should be really informational for you to understand like how things are connected. I said, it's a gigantic book. And I tell the team every time we talk, I just need you to sit there and read this chapter and be able to pull out where you can find what is applicable to your job. Do I think you're going to understand how an Ethernet packet is built? Absolutely not. I think you should take appreciation into it, but understand that all these things we're talking about are happening in fractions, you know, milliseconds and stuff like that. But when we start about talking about troubleshooting a network, well, now you have some base understanding of how this works on the background. So that's something I'm doing with my team to work to invest in them, right? I can't necessarily always give you the raise that you want, but I can give you professional growth and help you try to become a better employee. It's interesting how some are interested in it and some are not.
Right.
One of the
right.
things I also know he talked about, and MJ, you're kind of talking about this too, and now I am going to sit there and say, I think this is a great thing if it can happen. But he talked about, like, you want people on board. And he talked about, like, if a server is not on board and was kind of like not all in, like, he would cut ties with them. And listen, I think that is great if you have the ability to do that. And I'm saying that because I know as where we are in schools and trying to hire people, we're just trying to hire people to fill the job. And so we're not necessarily in that luxury where if someone isn't necessary, I mean, someone has to be like really terrible for us to try to cut them, because we're really trying to make it work. Right. I mean, otherwise we're absorbing that person who isn't there, that work. And so I appreciate what he was saying, but I also have to sit there and say, realistically, that's a challenge for us. Like, if you're trying to hire a level one person, yeah, you might have to eat it just to have the person be able to fill the job and hope that you can train them to come to where you want them to be, which kind of he talked about, you know, his interviewing process was really hire for, in some ways, personality and work to train them on, you know, on the task. So again, but the caveat of that is that it takes work. It takes a lot of work to get that person to get you to have your belief, but not just that, it's the technical aspect of that. So like the caveat is, yes, that's in a perfect world, absolutely 100%. But man, it does take work from either you or your team to help nurture that person into that growth. I just want to be honest with that. Like, right. I mean,
Totally. Cause, and that's one of the things that is good about us chewing over this book is, there are these like challenges, and I'm sure in the restaurant business as well, there's a challenge there, right? How do you find good servers and stuff? But how do you find good people, or how do you help people reframe what work means to them, right? Like, how do we help? Because yes, we could kind of perpetuate the whole idea of like, well, we just need a body in here. But the more and more we do that, like you were saying, like how much of that really shoots ourselves in the foot, and how do we like spin that around for people? Even though I'm hiring you and you may not be the, you know, whatever, like the most personable person, like do we set up the expectation, like, you know what, here's where you can start and here's where you can go, and we are here to help you go. So, you know, like, and have that expectation for people.
So, John, I don't know if you had something, you were off mute there for a second, but I truly think it one of our most important jobs as a leader is to hire and maintain the best staff possible. And it's hard right now. It's super hard. And I'm definitely one that my philosophy is I hire for fit as far as personality and then work on the skills. Now, yes, I'm going to be looking for a certain set of base skills, but if I can find the right personality, as long as it's not like my network engineer, like I'm going to be able to teach them 90% of what I need them to. But on the other side of that, you know, in the book, you know, he said it a little bit like, oh, we part ways. You know, part of our job as a leader is also helping your staff that it's not a good fit anymore. And it could have been a good fit for a while, and now it's not a good fit anymore. Helping them find a good fit, because they're going to be they're going to bring down the entire department as much as just removing them would bring it up, you know? So it's finding them a good fit, because there is a good fit for them somewhere else. So it's working collaboratively in that aspect.
I have so many things I wrote down here. I love this idea of he's saying hospitality is a selfish pleasure, because when you're serving, it allows you to feel good. You know, it says you feel great about making others feel good. I mean, you think of any task that you help somebody with, and you see their moment of aha or oh, like it truly makes you, feel good for, you know, we go back to that's our own PBIS, right? That's our own bucket filler that gets us maybe through the next, you know, challenging, event we would go to.
Yeah, that resonated me. That resonated with me too, Brian.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I can throw out like one other kind of thought that just comes to mind. Not necessarily related to that, but I think it's interesting. Is and I don't have my notes in front of me, guys, but he talked about restaurant smart versus I'm going to call it organization smart, or maybe it's flip-flop, but
they
his concept was this.
Corporate smart.
Yeah, that's what it is. Restaurant smart versus corporate smart. So restaurant smart was everything's about the food. The food is king. It needs to be great. But you don't care about costs. You don't care about making money or anything like that. Or corporation smart is like, no, like, let's do inventory properly. It doesn't make sense to get, this kind of ingredient versus this because it's very close and all of that. So this particular guy was on both sides of that. And I think often tech directors, sometimes we are teachers and we're on the restaurant smart side of it and we take over and it's yes, yes, yes. And sometimes we're more on the operation side or technologists that come in and we want to say no, no, no. And it's finding that happy medium. And like the printers is always like my example of like, oh man, it doesn't make sense to have these printers there, but I got to make sure I'm not stressing over it because it doesn't make sense. But at the end of the day, that's like a perfect example of meeting people in the middle. Let's not have printers in every classroom, but let's have printers strategically there, even though maybe I would argue that they shouldn't be there. So I thought that was interesting.
Right. Or even providing color. That's a trade-off. That's a trade-off that we're having to make, right?
That's right.
Well, and John, it kind of goes to exactly what you said there. And he talks about before we think that there's only one way of doing something, make sure you listen to the other approaches that are out there and understand that why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as this, as this first session of discussion kind of gets tied together, one of the things that Will Goddard talks about is that language creates culture, right? So what's a phrase or a word that you've taken away from this book so far that you want to start using with your teams at your district?
Oh my God, I have so many.
Oh.
I have so many. I'm like, oh my God, Like I'm like a kid who's like raising his hand, like I'm getting out of my seat. All right, you, John, I'm taking John's approach too because I have three, so I have to give you all three.
And for everybody, just for visual, Brian's legit like up and jumping right now. Like,
unfortunately, he has a Purdue shirt on.
Yeah, oh, I'm gonna write these down from John. I'm gonna write these down from Brian because they're gonna be good. They're gonna be good.
So, like tomorrow, I was telling before we started, tomorrow we go into an annual board planning meeting. And so to quickly give everybody a little context behind it, we're switching from Windows laptops next year and want to go 100% iPads, switch from Office 365 and go to Google. So I decided to rip all the Band-Aids off all at once. and so here we go. He had a quote on page 54, and I think he said his dad said this, and it was run towards what you want as opposed to running away from what you don't want. And if you want your people to be there for you, you in turn need to be there for them. So that was the first one I got, like super excited about. I mean, right? We as the leaders have to be there for our team, and the payback for that is when like the ish hits the fan for us. We know that if people are really, if they're on our team, they're going to drop everything and be like, hey, like we're here for you. Like we got your back. It was on page 29. He talked about Kaizen, which was the idea that in every organization, you should be always working to improve and getting better all the time. So I think of like, I think it's Deming's like idea of like continuous improvement, you know, and that goes back to investing in your people, you know, and doing it with intention. The last one, and then I'll mute myself so I can let others talk. I'm gonna give you a 4A and a 3A and a 3B. So this is what I'm actually gonna tell our board tomorrow. You know, as we go into this idea of iPads in Google next year, is what would we attempt to do if we couldn't fail? And that was on page 4. So he said, what would you attempt to do if you could not fail? And we know that our teachers have this fear of failure, and so they restrict themselves from what they're willing to try. So if there was no consequence of failure, then what would we all do? We should sit there and say the sky would be the limit. And with that, he kind of says on page 6, we need to be unreasonable to see a world that doesn't exist. And that is like, to me, that's what I need to be telling our board, our tech team, our admin staff. Like I'm the one who's supposed to show them that we have the ability to have these things. Like it's my job to bring it in. And so, you know, I'm supposed to show them the world that doesn't exist yet. And bring them to that world.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Casting a vision. All right. Those are awesome.
I love all those. And I'm not even going to add because those resonated with me as well. So thanks, Brian.
Okay. I am going to add. No, thank you, Brian. And thank you, John, for that affirmation. I am going to add, be the swan. Be the swan, you know, like make the charitable assumption, right? That a reminder to assume the best in people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And be the swan, like show that gracefulness in the front end while you're working it as much as you can underneath, right? So
this is really such a great book. I mean, I can't say enough about it.
The only one I would add, and I don't have the exact quote, and because I've got the audiobook, I'm not going to try to listen to it while everybody's listening to us have the podcast, but it's the, you know, the simple, small gestures that we do make huge impacts. And, you know, it goes back to the two examples, the wine one and then the meter one, like small value. I think it was something like small value adds are huge in rewards, something like that, which I absolutely loved. So, well, MJ, if you're good, I've got a random question. That's not so random this time.
Oh, they're good. Yeah.
Okay. So since we're kind of talking about restaurants and we're kind of in the restaurant week time frame, Now,
oh yes, we are. What great! I didn't even know that that was like all going to come together like that.
I didn't either until about 5 minutes ago. I was like searching for random questions, and then I was like, "Wait, why? This is a great one." And we're not sponsored by anybody, but we're willing to entertain ideas for being sponsored by restaurants. What's your favorite current restaurant that people might want to try? And I can go first if you guys need a minute to think about it, because I just was out last week. My wife and I went on a double date, and I'd never been to this restaurant. It's up in Rosemont. And, you know, the very funny thing, you know, obviously I do a handful of traveling, but so I fly over Rosemont a lot, but the restaurant that we just tried that I absolutely loved was Saltwater Coastal Grill. And it's in that like MB Park area in Rosemont. So Saltwater Coastal Grill, they've got great sushi, but they also have unbelievable other seafood. And they also have some more traditional like grill stuff too. So great. Would highly recommend it.
I love this question. This is like, I'm not like a foodie, but I could go on and on. So anyone that's listening to this, anytime we're an IETL event, feel free to talk about this, because I've taken it to a level where I've organized with friends a mystery dinner every 3 months. So Heidi and I took three other couples to our favorite restaurant in the Chicagoland area, and they didn't know until they arrived. And then we've kind of bounced around. So I'm going to cheat and just give you two. So Heidi and I took three other couples was Capri in Burr Ridge.
Awesome.
And it is just an unbelievably awesome Italian food / experience. Tons of old timers in there, a cool front bar, just awesome. And then the second one with that I'm putting out there, it's a way south, so not a lot of you have been there, but it's in Beecher and it's called Princess Cafe, and it has the best steaks, old time. Mm-hmm. It's so good, and it's affordable. And then my favorite restaurant of all time is Fuddruckers. So
I love it. I love it.
Fuddruckers. Oh my gosh. That's hilarious. Okay. I'm going to go. And then you can end for us, Brian.
You'll be disappointed.
No. Our family's favorite restaurant is a restaurant up in Highland Park called Torino. It's a kind of a mom and pop kind of Japanese restaurant that it's actually moms. Actually, a bunch of Japanese moms have pulled together and they created this entire restaurant called Torino. And they serve some pretty kick-ass Japanese food.
That's awesome.
There. If you wanted to do something fine dining, and I've only been here once and it was on a treat. It's a restaurant called Boca. And I mean, it's fine dining. It's definitely fine dining, but it was a culinary experience that was like, wow, this is awesome. So if you're interested.
All right, Brian.
I hate to think that I'm the big finish on this one. So with two kids in high school and one in a lot of activities, we venture to the Bona Beef a lot, and
that is clearly
not fine dining, but I like to think I support the Bonavolato family very well.
It's a solid choice, Brian. Solid choice.
It is. So I will say I did have to look at my calendar because I'm like, we did have a dinner date way, way back in August. That's how often I get out of my house with my wife alone. But we visited a place called Jen's Guest House, and it was in Willow Springs.
Excellent.
So that was actually a really, really nice place.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
Brian, you got to go to Princess Cafe because you're down south here.
I will.
I have one thing I want to share outside of the food, but go ahead, Tony. Close out your thought if that was about food.
I was just going to tell everybody who's listening, we will in the description of the podcast, we'll put links to all of these places. So if you want to go to places, you can find them. So, okay, John, go ahead.
One personal story. So I was young, just out of college. It was I didn't go right into school district. So I was working for a company called SchoolNet, and I turned to a colleague, and we were in a small office. I was working with Chicago Public Schools and Cleveland and a few other districts as a client. And I said at that time, I'm like, man, like somewhere dream job got brought up. And I'm like, I'd love to run technology for a suburban district. And when I got the job at District 230, which was probably, I don't know, 12 years later, that person reached out to me, who I hadn't talked to in years, and said, hey, you told us that you wanted to do this, and now you have your dream job. So Brian's story really just resonated with me, and it just makes me love Brian even more. Like, that is just cool. It was cool what he said, because that just, like, got me. So thanks, Brian.
That's awesome.
Oh, yay. Well, and we're here for each other. Celebrating each other. That's great.
Absolutely. And, you know, just as we, because this is just the first of a total of three podcasts that we're doing on this book, what I want to challenge everybody that's listening is observe and try to find a spot or a time where you have experienced unreasonable hospitality. And then in the inverse, I want you to find a time where you had just the opposite. And I can say that in the past month, I've had both. And it's reading this book and now seeing those two experiences, I can easily say how they completely made or broke my day. And so I'm going to challenge everybody to look for those. At the next recording, I'll give a little bit more on what those experiences were. But I just want to challenge all of our listeners to that and our readers to that, just to keep your eyes open, because that's what we can learn from. So, you know, again, quick reminder, we've got next week, we've got the IETL workshop number 3 and the IdeaCon. And then we've got our CTO summit coming. So again, mark June 20th, and we've got some news coming out about that very, very shortly. So until then, keep doing all the great stuff that you guys are doing, and just keep after it.
Yep. Stay strong, guys. Bye.